Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. When you think about it, the idea that all people convicted of felonies should automatically lose their right to vote makes very little sense. This is especially true for those who've served their prison sentences and are now back in the community trying to rebuild their lives. Thankfully, a state court order issued earlier this year brought an end to this practice by striking down a statute that barred many people with felony convictions, a group that consists disproportionately of people of color, from voting. Last week, the judge's order took effect, and more than 56,000 people on probation and parole regained their right to vote. And recently, I caught up with one of the advocates who helped usher in this long-overdue change, Attorney Whitley Carpenter of the nonprofit Law and Policy Center, Forward Justice.
Well, Whitley Carpenter, welcome to News and Views. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So I want to get into the subject of felony disenfranchisement, which is a really important and really current topic. But before that, take a step back and just tell our listeners about Forward Justice, this organization that you're serving as a senior counsel with.
Sure. So Forward Justice is a law, policy, and strategy center based in North Carolina. Our mission is to really advocate for racial, social, and economic justice. And we do that by working with organizations and coalitions that are really at the forefront of the social movements in the South. And so we are actively trying to change harmful laws and policies by organizing and changing the culture and the narrative of those policies. So really excited to be here from Forward Justice talking to you today about felony disenfranchisement.
Yeah, well, we're excited to have you. It's an incredibly important and timely subject. It's one in which actually I sense sort of weirdly, it may be one of the few areas where right and left kind of have found some common ground recently in terms of the injustices that our criminal justice system has inflicted on so many people. Talk to us about felony disenfranchisement, though. I think there's a lot of people who may think they understand the idea of people losing their right to vote because they have a conviction, but there's a lot of history there that maybe isn't so well known as to what's really at the root of a lot of these policies.
Right. Basically, I guess to start, felony disenfranchisement in North Carolina means that once you have been convicted of a felony in court, you lose your right to vote. And that right was not restored until you completed whatever your sentence is, whether that be an active prison sentence or your probation or your post-release supervision or parole. But what we have been fighting for the past few years and have been successful and recently have been able to say is that everyone that lives in our communities, those are people that may have been convicted of a felony, may have gone to prison, but you are living in our community in North Carolina. That means that you can be on probation, you can be on post-release supervision, you can be on parole. You are eligible to vote in North Carolina as of July the 27th.
An incredibly forward-thinking, important piece of progress in our state. And I want to talk details about that. But I do want to not completely leave the subject of the history of this, which is that there's an argument, I think a very persuasive argument to be made, that this isn't quite so pure as some of the defenders of felony disenfranchisement would have us believe. There's a history to why we have felony disenfranchisement in this state and in the South.
That's right, Robin. I could talk for a very long time, so I'm going to try to summarize it.
Okay.
But if we want to go back in the history, before the Civil War, North Carolina disenfranchised people convicted of what they called infamous crimes. And then after the Civil War, when it was clear that Black people would be given the right to vote, former rebels started this widespread campaign of convicting Black people of infamous crimes and whipping us as a punishment. And so the sentence of whipping then operated as this civil disqualification so that people who were whipped, according to the local law, could not vote. And so disenfranchising people that were convicted of crimes ultimately became this strategy to suppress the political power of African Americans in our state. So the 15th Amendment, as you may know, stopped states from expressly denying the right to vote to African Americans, but states like North Carolina and many other Southern states enacted these felony disenfranchisement schemes to indirectly accomplish that goal of preventing us from voting. And you'll know about other schemes like poll taxes or literacy tests. This is another one of those schemes. So North Carolina adopted felony disenfranchisement into our Constitution in 1876. And the current statutory scheme that existed when we started this litigation was enacted in 1877. And it's not surprising that the legislator who prepared and proposed this statutory scheme was an outspoken supporter of Jim Crow and presided over lynchings of African-American people. And so we've seen slight changes. After that, 1933, they changed a waiting period for people to be able to vote again after having been convicted of certain crimes. You didn't really see additional amendments until 1971, which got rid of some of the additional requirements. In 1973, some additional amendments were made so that a person didn't have to go before a judge to get their rights restored. But the statute has pretty much remained the same since 1973. And this is the statute that in our litigation, CSI v. Moore, we challenged in order to unlock the vote and restore the right to vote to people who live in our communities and have been convicted of a felony.
And it should be pointed out, we're talking here about people who are out of incarceration, but there are some parts of the country where you actually still retain your right to vote, even if you are incarcerated. There are states in this country where actually there are polling places in jails, and it's not a terribly radical idea that people remain citizens, even if they've had a violation of the law. We're not going that far here. We're only talking about people who have actually finished their active sentence and may still be on parole or probation.
That is right. That is right. There are a few states, as well as the District of Columbia, I believe, where you are able to vote when you are incarcerated for a felony conviction. And there are a number of other states just in the past couple of decades that have just moved towards restoring the right to vote to people who have been convicted of felonies. So we really just want North Carolina to be on the right side of progress in history in this context.
We're talking with Whitley Carpenter, who's a senior criminal justice counsel at the nonprofit advocacy organization Forward Justice, where Forward Justice has just succeeded in some litigation. Talk to us a little bit more about the details of this case. There's been a ruling from the courts in North Carolina, may not be completely over, but for now, we know that everybody who has been is on probation, parole, or post-release supervision is immediately eligible to vote as a result of this lawsuit. Am I right about that?
That's right. So we actually brought this case on behalf of four organizational plaintiffs, as well as individual plaintiffs. So the organizational plaintiffs are Community Success Initiative, the North Carolina chapter of the NAACP, Washaway Unemployment, and Justice Serve North Carolina. And each of those organizations works on behalf of individuals who may be impacted by this case. And so many of them are doing reentry work and are regularly working with those individuals who have been convicted of felonies. And as I mentioned, this statute disproportionately impacts African Americans. And so most of these organizations are trying to get out the vote now. You know, ever since July 27th, there have been a number of voter registration drives and community events to, one, inform people of their rights, as well as provide them with the necessary materials to go ahead and register to vote. The Board of Elections has changed the forms. They have updated the materials that people need to register. And so people who are living in our communities convicted of felonies right now can go out, get a registration form. Feel free to reach out to us at Forward Justice if you have any questions about your individual status. But people are eligible and currently impacted, able to vote.
I saw a statistic in a report actually by NC Policy Watch by our reporter Kellen Lyons, who reported that Black people make up 21% of North Carolina's voting age population, but over 42% of those who are ineligible to cast a ballot because of felony, probation, parole, or post-supervision release. So it seems likely that this could have an impact if we can actually get these people registered to vote, have them participate again in democracy. This could be a significant development, both for those individuals, but also for our democracy as a whole.
Absolutely. And we really want to use this opportunity to educate not only impacted people, but everyone in our community that this is what's happening in North Carolina, and to really change the narrative, to help people to understand that, you know, the people who are impacted by this are no different than me or you or any of us. They are taxpaying members of our communities. They're our neighbors, they're our brothers, our sisters, our cousins, they're kids go to the same schools, they attend the same churches and parks. And so they should really be able to vote for the superintendent and school board members that are going to impact their kids' education. And they should be able to vote for the county commissioners and city council members and the state legislators that are going to determine the state budgets and ordinances and laws. And they should really have a voice in determining the judges and the district attorneys that run the local court system. So that's the message that we want to get across, and hope that other folks in the community can help to spread the word in the same way that we see, you know, GOTV get out the vote campaigns. We can see that for this context as well.
And am I right? We're talking about more than 50,000 individuals who could actually be affected by this?
That's right. We can say more than 56,000 individuals could be impacted as being individuals that are currently under some sort of state community supervision. Expert witness Frank Baumgartner worked with us in the litigation and was able to conduct the necessary research and pull the statistics to let us know with a snapshot in time how many people on a given day could this impact.
We're talking with Whitley Carpenter, who's the Senior Criminal Justice Counsel at the nonprofit advocacy organization Forward Justice. We're coming to the end of our discussion of felony disenfranchisement, but I know you all at Forward Justice are working hard to provide direct assistance to people if they actually have a question. There's a hotline they can call. I know that it's listed on your website. They can email you. What's the best way for folks to find out more information if they have any questions about how to go about helping themselves or someone else?
If you have any questions, please check out our website, unlockourvotenc.org. We are updating that website as things continue to develop. We are working on our Freedom Summer campaign to have voter registration events across the country, particularly in the regions where we'll have higher populations of people impacted by this change. And Unlock Our Vote will have links to the voter registration forms, as well as information, as you mentioned, for our hotline. We have an email address hotline as well. If you have questions about your specific situation, about the supervision that you may be under, we are happy to answer those specific questions and provide you with the necessary materials to get out and register to vote.
Say that website one more time.
It's unlockourvotenc.org.
Check them out, folks. It's an incredibly impressive organization doing incredibly important work. I'm sure if you also went to their website, forwardjustice.org, and decided to make a contribution or wanted to volunteer, I'm sure they'd be willing to receive that as well.
Absolutely.
Whitley, thanks so much for being with us. Hopefully we'll talk again later this year and talk about how this has been a successful campaign to improve our democracy.
Thank you so much. I look forward to it, Rob.
Coming up next, the chair of the Wake County Board of Commissioners joins us to discuss how the county can and should make use of millions of dollars in funds it will receive as part of a national opioid settlement. Stay with us.